Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Henkel. Excellence is our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 284 for April 24th of 2015, tearing down the Model T of our time. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 19 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Gary Vasilash. Hey, you guys had a good show last week.
Thank you. We missed you. You were under the weather, and we had to soldier on without you.
I was puking my guts out, to be honest. Yeah. So
I'm glad you weren't here.
Yeah, right. But it was good. Yeah. And we got to tell everybody we got Lindsay Brook back again from SAE International.
Great to see you, John. Here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll get into talking about what's been going on at the SAE Congress later on in the show, but we got to let everybody know we got Sandy Monroe here from Monroe and Associates, and he's back. He's back with his bag of
popular
tricks.
Popular demand.
Right. Oh boy, popular demand. Yikes. Well, that's good.
Well, John and I wanted to see you again.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it's just ran out of other people.
You know, so. It's just like, what the hell? Let's get Sandy on.
Lindsay's just pretending.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like the
feigning interest.
The kid, you had to put a pork chop around his neck to get the dog to play with him or something. Yeah. No, I'm happy to be back. I really am.
So we've been promoting the show all week, talking about the teardown that your company did of the BMW i3. And we'll need to get into the details. And I should hasten to add that you don't just rip cars apart so that people can look at the parts. You actually look at what kind of materials went into it, how those materials were processed, i.e. the manufacturing process. You've got software that you call Design Profit that helps predict what the actual cost of making all this stuff is. Yeah. So I just want to set that as part of the backdrop, that you're not just getting out there with an impact wrench and taking these things apart. I mean, you're taking them down damn near to the molecular level.
Well, actually, in the case of the battery, we did have to go to the molecular level because we had to come up with the chemical formulas that actually make the battery work. So all of those little fluids and all the different components inside. And
well, wait, just before you get into specifics.
Okay, explain, okay. We know what you did, but those who are watching don't know what you did and why you did it, and that you've been doing stuff like this right along.
Let's start with the car. You bought an i3, and you bought this some time ago when they were not easy to get. Not that they're easy now, but how'd you get one?
They're not easy to get, but getting that one was even tougher because it was impounded. The government wouldn't let them in initially. So we put a tag on one and then found a dealer that was going to get it to us. I wanted one of the very first ones as fast as I could get it. And what we did, we got it in June or July, I can't remember, but early on.
Last year.
And we dove into it. Now, I thought I'd buy it and then I'd coax an OEM into paying us to tear it to pieces and find out how much it costs and things like that. And there wasn't a heck of a lot of interest initially. The car companies are saying, this is going to be like a toy. It's made out of carbon fiber. I mean, the way you do that is, and then they describe F1 manufacturer with the bagging and the vacuum and then sending it into the autoclave and everything else. And I said, no, I don't think it's like that. I think it's different. And they weren't buying it. So I had a car, and then we started looking at it. And every time we looked at something, we went, oh, my God, look at this. Oh, look at that. Oh, my. So
In an impressed way.
A very
You're not looking at it going, boy, what a joke.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's not 100% true.
Oh, because there's good stuff to get into.
No, I guess everybody has different tastes. My tastes don't run along that style. I mean, I'm from an engineering standpoint, yeah, everything was jaw-dropping. But styling-wise, not for me. I didn't care for the styling, right. But it was comfortable. I liked some of the cleanness. The instrument panel is extremely clean. It's only got two little modules. Everything is electronic, and it's like running my tablet or my cell phone or something like that. I like that idea. It's a giant departure from the old day. In fact, that's what we say. It's like the watershed. That car is the watershed. Everything from the past is the past. Everything from here forward is what's going to happen. Either that or you're going to die. It's as simple as that. The guys that don't jump
right,
on this
just
car.
Just because it's electric and carbon fiber?
No, because it's so different in every way.
So how many cars have you done in your career at Monroe?
You mean like,
Monroe's torn down probably maybe 200-something cars. Nah, figures. Vassalash asked me questions I don't have answers to. But anyway,
I know
there's about 120 or so we've done to the nth degree.
Right. So when you say that this is a watershed, I mean, this is
background. Yeah. Exactly right. I this isn't something like, some professor making noise. I'm telling you flat. We've seen lots and lots and lots of vehicles. And by the way, I'm not just talking about automobiles either. This is a watershed for aircraft. This is a watershed for high-speed trains. This is a watershed for a whole lot of things. It's not just that car. This is the Model T of our time. This is, like I say, everything on the other side, everything that was in the past is the past.
So, thumbnail, what makes this so revolutionary?
Well, the top two or three, number one is the way they can build carbon fiber. Now, you guys know, but maybe the audience doesn't. I spent a lot of time in the aircraft industry, and I've also worked with F1 cars, two or three different companies. I know a lot about custom cars and what you have to do in order to get a good product out of carbon fiber. And I will tell you that normally a carbon fiber part, from the time you decide to start it until you've got the part in hand, ready to put in place, you're looking at days, 3, 4, 5 days, okay? Because it takes a while, you lay it all down, and there's a lot of toxic things that are going on. And you've got a lot of equipment, like the autoclaves and whatnot, they're not cheap. When we started digging into this and found out that the cycle time is less than 5 minutes, like, so if they want to, they can roll a car off the line in 5 minutes, every 5 minutes. That was big stuff. I don't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do that.
The body structure in 5 minutes.
The body structure, everything. The car's cycle time is 5 minutes. So like a normal car line is 1 minute. Mm-hmm. We usually look at a 60-second cycle time, and a car rolls off. This is 5 minutes.
Wow.
And you could roll a car off the line. So that to me was big, big stuff. But it wasn't just the carbon fiber. The carbon fiber is definitely, it uses RTM, resin transfer molding. They don't use really, it's a kind of epoxy, but it's a polypropylene and an agent. It's a very, very smart use of the materials. And then that's good all by itself. And then they figured out how they could recycle it, which was kind of smart too. And then the bits and pieces, the offal that normally would get thrown away, they take them and stitch them together, and it turns into the roof. And the roof happens to be a Class A surface. I mean, and it looks like
Class A. Out of offal. And it's Class A.
And it's Class A. So it's a whole bunch of bits and pieces, scraps, that are knitted or sewn together, and that becomes your roof. So that, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I can go on and on with that stuff. By the way, for those of you who have never seen carbon fiber, this is what it looks like, and we're not going to wave this around because I start sneezing. But anyways, this is what it looks like when it's...
just looks like a black mat.
It looks like...
That's woven together.
Exactly. It's stitched together. So that's what keeps it from falling to pieces. So you can see it stitched in two different directions. And that kind of is what you start with when you're
Well, that's
when you're
interesting.
Making the mat.
You say stitched, not woven, because hasn't carbon fiber heretofore been all woven mat?
No, it's always
stitched like that?
It's always stitched like that. That's what gives it that cool look.
So, Sandy, you took your costing all the way back to Moses Lake, Washington, where they
said. No, we didn't. We went back to Torrey.
Okay.
Yeah, so we went right back to nothing. When we do costing, it's a lot different than everybody else. We want every step, every chemical, every process, every machine tool. And we benchmarked this based on its country or not country, but its location of origin. So Moses Lake, that's an origin. Not Washington State, but only Moses Lake. And Torrey, the prefecture that has Torrey in it. So I know what the labor rates are going to be. I know what the utilities costs are. I know what the machine costs are. That's how we do our stuff. It's very, very accurate, very, very precise. And the one thing that we found when we started doing the costing, these buggers, the BMW guys, really put it to us.
So,
you know that they make stuff in Morocco?
No.
You know what? Neither did we. And we didn't have any cost models for Morocco. So we had to go and develop the cost models to suit these.
What do they build in Morocco?
I don't know. The guy that worked on it, he doesn't want to talk about it. But anyways, he was very frustrated. But they told me that Morocco, there was about five or six different spots. We've never heard of anybody building anything there. Hmm. And so we had to go back and develop cost models for those areas.
But to back to the carbon fiber, you had told me one time that they're using different levels of carbon fiber for different aspects. And it seems to me that that generally in the auto industry, the approach is we're going to make them all the same, and that these guys were more clever than that. And they just said, okay, horses for courses, we're going to put different materials where they belong.
Right. And they did use material selection, and they also did a good job on layering, and that's why I brought this thing. On this one, you can see that there's different layers.
And this is what, interior trim panel?
This is part of the structure. And so you can see, like, this is a fastener that's been formed around the carbon fiber. Most of them are called onsets. This is an inset, but most of the things are onsets. They're adhesively glued to the carbon fiber, and we have already done our little testing. You'll break the carbon fiber before you'll get rid of the onset. That glue, that adhesive doesn't break. And if you look at this, you can see, well, here's a layer, and that's why I brought this one, because we tore it apart, completely apart. So some of this stuff did delaminate because we were using sledgehammers, literally, and you were there when we were trying to cut this thing to pieces. I mean, it really is a strong vehicle. Way stronger than you'd ever believe. So you can see here's one layer, and it appears to be going this way. And then if you look at it, you can see there's another layer underneath, and it's going that way. And then you can see that this layer, the one that's sitting on top, it's going in another direction. So what you got is one's like that, one's like this, one's like that. And that way, in crash, you've got...
They're oriented.
They're oriented correctly. Yeah.
Right.
So they did a very, very good job at figuring out how to design the car for ultimate crash worthiness and also ultra lightweight.
How did you find things like bill of material in this car?
No, we make the bill of material as we're tearing it apart.
Compared to it's like a typical modern sedan, is it dramatically reduced in terms of fastener count and so forth?
Well, there's hardly any fasteners. Everything's glued on, so it's
all
very difficult.
Structural adhesive.
Right. Plus,
which you love, right? You hate fasteners.
Actually, you know what? A long time ago, I hated structural adhesives, too. But you know what? Not now. I will tell you, too, that there's the onsets are glued on, but there's also little things that they put these little nubs. And the nubs are for, that's how you load the wire into the car, the wiring harness. There's little nubs that come when you send the the polypropylene and the curing agent, when you send it in, they put voids in the mold so that you get these little nubs. And now the resin takes a form, and now for free, I got all these little tracers so I can put all of the wires and pipes and anything else that's in there. They all weave right in.
Clever.
And get it for free. I mean, a whole bunch of stuff that we would have fasteners for are gone because of this.
Wow.
How do you, in a heavy electrified vehicle, look into something like an ECU, which is increasingly a big part of cost of, you know, electrified products, but you've got to figure out algorithms and all the work that goes into that box. How do you put a cost and time and so forth into that?
Funny you should ask.
He just has to have a bag full of ECU pieces.
I did not. You know what? I picked up the ECU.
Sure, Lindsay, have one. Now figure it out.
Nobody's going to care about the ECU. I'm going to bring what everybody wants to talk about, which is infotainment. Oh, and I broke it. Now I'm going to get into trouble with my guys.
It'll never play the same again.
It won't. So anyway, these are the bits and pieces for the infotainment center, which is...
I can have one, too.
Okay. We won't do that. But anyway, if you have a look at this stuff, okay, so now everybody's got a handful of rubbish. So, because that's what it is now. But if you have a look at it, it's populated with a bunch of little things, right? Mm-hmm. So every one of those little things has a cost, and every one of those little things tells us what's going on.
Right.
Okay? Resistors are pretty easy, but some of these other boxes here, we had to decap, take them apart, or x-ray them in order to make that happen. Now, we can do that, but we chose to go with our partner, which is Tech Insight. Tech Insight and Tech Teardown, their Teardown Inc. is the best guys we know anyway for helping us out with the costing and basically the descriptions associated with each one of these different each one of these different circuit boards. So I mentioned in the room that I probably pumped about $2 million into this thing. That's cost. There's no
into the teardown. $2 million right. Just to tear this car down, yeah. But yeah. Not and just these, the teardown, but also to do all the figuring out.
Well, the
cost
teardown
thing, estimating
teardown probably costs about. If I was going to tear a car down for free or for just for us and whatnot, and I wasn't going to be charging a customer and I wasn't going to add SG&A or profit or anything else, it costs about $28,000-$29,000 tops. Okay, tear it down, take pictures or whatever. That's about what. It doesn't cost very much. But if you want to go into the detail of how much does this thing cost, the guys that did the electronics, Tech Insight, they told me that this would have cost about $200,000 to do the circuit boards, and I got like $2 million into the car itself. So this is not a cheap proposition because everything is documented, everything.
John, this is your favorite company, Harman.
Harman, no kidding. Very interesting.
And the car was how much? $50,000 for this car?
It was $54,000. Yeah.
$54,000.
It was $54,000. So we bought the RX version,
which is the hybrid version, right? Is the
range
extender?
It's a range extender. What it is it's got a little motorcycle engine in it. That's a sad commentary. We don't need to walk on. I mean, that thing was not very. They should have picked something else.
Right.
But anyways, they have the two-cylinder motorcycle engine, but the generator.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
And as luck would have it,
I just happen to have one here.
Exactly.
Laminations.
Exactly. Laminations. So laminations tell you a lot about what's going on inside of everything, and this is the lamination that's inside the. Where do I point this? Okay. Anyway, this is the lamination that's inside the generator.
Is that fine blanked?
It is fine blanked, but what's more important is look at that contour. Look at that shape. Like, here's where your magnets go, right? They go in these long, skinny things because the orientation for magnets when you're trying to generate power is better if they're vertical. But what about these holes, and what's this funny look? These guys actually created new science. This gives me a magnetic flux. It's a little different than everything else. We were very impressed. And if we look at the motor, that's made by a supplier. This is made by BMW. BMW has decided that the motor is profound knowledge. They're keeping that in-house.
Core technology.
And it is. And so what you're looking at here, again, is here's where the magnets go. And again, you're looking at a lot of iron that's been taken away that we just give weight.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and have more of this. Stay tuned. Okay, so you were, when we were last talking, you were showing us what BMW was not letting outside.
So anyway, this is the stuff from the motor, but this is even cooler. Now, we've taken apart every motor and every battery of every system that's come into the U.S., okay? So if it's hybrid or pure electric.
Okay, every battery of every motor of every what?
Every car. Okay, so any hybrid or any electric vehicle that came in, we've taken it apart and we've looked inside. So we've taken apart and analyzed and costed every motor that that every drive motor.
So every Prius, every Spark, every whatever.
Spark? No, we haven't done
Leaf,
Tesla.
Wait a minute, not this.
Spark is Chevy.
Spark, yeah, the Spark is Chevy. What's the other one?
The Bolt.
The Bolt and Bolt. We have not taken a Bolt apart.
Yeah,
there is no
the Spark. I'm not sure about, but yes, we did the Volt. We've done the
Tesla Model
C Max. If you can think of it, probably we've done it. So normally, what you see is this is made kind of like in a big circle. Okay, this is where your windings go. But that's not what BMW did. They made little teeny sections, okay, and they made them like a little puzzle. See, it's got this little little hole here and a little nub on the other side.
Why wouldn't you just stamp it out?
And that's exactly what. It came out in a long strip, okay, but if they would have tried to curl it around, you know, to where it needs to be, like a big circle, well, it would have bent and they would have had problems. So what they did was they made it in little sectors. Okay, like putting together a little train, right? So I stamp it flat, no offal. It's very little scrap. But if it was made round,
lots of offal.
Lots of scrap.
Yeah.
Right? So then they take it and put it together like this. So you see it, it's just like a little train set.
Train tracks.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
So this is kind of like this is kind of the one of the everything.
Why were they so obsessed by taking care of all of the bits and pieces? I mean, you mentioned earlier about how they take the scrap pieces of carbon fiber that were part of making the chassis and laying them together and then remolding them to make the roof, which is Class A surface. You're pointing out that they're making these stampings that otherwise would just, you know, there'd be a lot of sheet metal, they'd melt it and whatever. I mean, what do you think is behind this careful attention?
I truly believe that if you take a bunch of engineers and you don't give them restrictions, they'll give you wonderful products. But if you make a restriction that says something like, hey, I want to have the minimum amount of tooling costs, and I want to have the maximum amount of product that's going to go out the door without scrap or whatever. Now you've challenged the engineer way more than normal. And that's when you start getting this. That's when you start getting this kind of stuff. I don't know why anybody hasn't done this before. I mean, but you know what? This is morally right. Okay, we don't usually, as an engineer, we don't usually get the opportunity to do what's morally right. Green is an interesting concept, but it costs a lot of money, we think. It costs a lot of money to go green, but these guys have proved that that's not true. You can make money, and here's a good example.
So we should point out you're an engineer just for those.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I am an engineer. I am the engineer.
So this really is like Model T. I mean, Ford's original kind of brief for his team was a lot of the same kind of stuff.
If I didn't know better, I'd say that they resurrected him and put him in charge. Yeah. Because I'll tell you flat, there's so many things like this that we're dumbfounded. I mean, it doesn't happen that often. There's very little that comes across in a car that we get excited about. Very, very little. Because we work on some really, literally, spacey things. And we don't just do automotive. We do aircraft. We do a lot of different things. And when we started seeing this, to get me excited doesn't happen that often. I want to see magic. And although this isn't magic, from a money-making standpoint, it is magic.
So you think they're making money on this car?
I'm positive they're making. They
even at the very low volume that they're at? Mm.
They're at 12,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but isn't this engineered to be a low-volume car, and the whole process is ideal for
so,
that.
But even so, to have a low-volume car and, you know, you paid over 50 grand, you know, most of them are going out the door at around 43,000. So to make 12,000 cars a year at $43,000, I mean, do the multiplication. That's not a lot of money to play around with and be able to make a profit. Yeah.
So how do they do that? And now you might ask that.
That's okay. Where the magic comes in.
You guys are reporters. Come on. I'm the engineer. You're the reporter.
So how did they do it?
All right. So what's the differential between stamping body in white, conventional monocoque or unibody, whatever? What's the cost of
the tooling cost?
The tooling
is very high.
What would that be? Any idea?
I think it's $12 million a die set per panel.
Yeah, well, what's the whole number?
How many panels? I mean, just the Class A, you got two front fenders, a hood, a roof, four doors, a deck lid, and rear fender. I don't know. You're looking at, 15 different die sets at least?
It's
just
about
for the exterior.
Yeah, well, we'll cut to the chase. It's about $450 million,
okay?
That's what it costs. So how much to do the stuff
I-3?
Yeah.
As luck would have it, we've already calculated it out. We haven't got the whole number yet. We're at we're almost finished, and we're at $112 million.
So this is a reinvention of the automobile.
You got it.
So it's a quarter of the...
And you know what? It's on a frame.
It is. It's body on frame.
It's body on frame.
Carbon fiber body on aluminum frame.
Right.
Right. So the carbon fiber, that's a tough one for most of the tin bangers to take. I used to work in that kind of field as well, in body in white. It's tough for me to swallow hard and say, you mean we're going to get rid of sheet metal? But actuality, it's pretty hard not to when you see the numbers. Yes, carbon fiber from a material standpoint is more expensive. But, oh, yeah, the offal that I'd throw in the garbage, I just took it and sewed it in to make a roof. I don't have much in the way of offal.
Right.
Wow, that's kind of interesting. And then I don't have to really crash the car. I have to crash the frame. The frame basically is everything, right? So if BMW decides, and I hope they do, to swap out the look of the car and put another bucket on top of it.
Voila.
Which was the brilliance of body on frame for years for the U.S. industry.
Right. And the reason we went, what happens is people don't remember why we did things. I remember going to unibody and thinking, why did anybody think we should go do body on frame? What were they thinking? We went to unibody so we could reduce the weight, but more importantly, I could reduce the cost. I got rid of cost because we were making 600,000 units a year. We had to crank these things out like there was no tomorrow as fast as we possibly could. Unibody's perfect for that. But what happens when you're only looking at 60,000 a year? Oh, 50, 60,000, that's not a good idea. 450 million or... It will probably wind up at about 120 million, something like that.
Wow.
So is there a sweet spot for the volume, though, for carbon fiber?
And the sweet spot is probably going to be under 100,000, at least right now. Okay, with the techniques that I know about right now, it's probably going to be at under 100,000. For the kind of carbon fiber operation we're looking at here, this is probably good from about 1,000 to about 30,000. That's I think, the
way that BMW is doing it now.
BMW is doing it with this way. But then this is the i3, and ta-da, you guys know about the i5?
Yeah.
So the i5 doesn't use this process. It's carbon fiber, but it doesn't use this process. And the reason for that is because it's not an electric vehicle. Well, it's not electric in the way we were thinking. And you probably already know about this, too, with a Toyota thing. Well, Toyota and BMW made a swap. Toyota is giving BMW the fuel cell. So now they have a fuel cell car, and that's what the i5 is. It's a fuel cell vehicle. It's not a
battery electric.
Not a battery. And the i5 is actually a unibody, and that moves you from where you are now, which was like 30,000 to puts you into the $100,000, or sorry, the 100,000.
Wait a minute! You just convinced us body on frame's the best. You're saying unibody is the way.
This is the thing. Everybody's looking for the one magic bullet. There isn't a magic bullet. From 1,000 to 30,000, put it on a frame. Okay, that's 30 to maybe even 50,000. Okay, put it on a frame. After that, you have to start looking at a whole bunch of rationale, and some of that rationale has to do with where's the sweet spot. How much money are we spending? Do we spend the money? What kills programs? Every program that I've been ever on
goes
that
over
died,
cost.
It wasn't a cost. It's the investment cost. And when I'm looking at $450 million versus even, say, $200
million, right.
I don't care if my piece cost is higher because I got to amortize all that other junk, and I got to buy that right now. That's my boom. Here's my investment. That investment is a killer for most car companies. Now we're looking at something where you're looking at 25, 35%. That's what, 75, 65% of the normal cost goes away? Make mine a double. I mean, that's... It doesn't take long to figure out what you want to do.
Will there be carryover between I-3 and I-5 to try to leverage anything here, all this invention that's on...
I know a little bit about what's going on the I-5. I know that it looks different than this, and I know that it's a unibody and not on frame. I know that it's a fuel cell. I know that they're going to probably try and leverage some of the... I know the styling is supposed to look the same, which I don't understand, but then I, you know, I...
But then you tear them apart, so what difference does it make?
Yeah. I just rip them to shreds. I don't really care about too much about the look of the vehicle. I do, but
I agree with you. It's not a handsome car.
Yeah. No,
it's different. And this was still when the theory was, although the theory seems to be changing, that you had to make a car that's electric look very, very different.
Right.
Because that's what those buyers wanted to show the world, that they were driving something that's electric.
Right.
That's why I find it so interesting. The Chevy Bolt with a B as in boy is going more mainstream in the style.
Oh, even the new Volt is pretty refined in that regard as well.
Yeah. So, Sandy, what is this giant thing you brought here?
That's a big caster.
You got this big thing, and I can't let you leave
without talking about this giant thing.
It's made, this thing has is a body on frame, right? So this is the rear suspension.
Rear suspension mounting.
The mounting for the rear
suspension. And this attaches to the frame.
And this attaches to the frame. And the frame's made out of aluminum. And the
must be aluminum, too.
And this is also aluminum. But this is a die casting. And if you're like me and you're an engineer and you say something like, I'm going to take a die casting and I'm going to turn it into the mount for the suspension, people will laugh at you. Because, you know...
That's not done.
It's worse than walking in with your fly open or something like that. It's, that's dumb. You can't do that.
Why?
Because it won't work. It'll crash. It'll fall apart. But obviously, these guys, they didn't get told that. And then I say, I'm going to take this die casting and now I'm going to weld it to a couple of extruded aluminum beams. Then, again, people will start laughing at you because you can't do that either. And yet, this... Okay, now, if this was made out of steel and I could manipulate it, I would be Superman.
Yeah.
This weighs about, I think it's 17 clicks. Hang on a second. Oh, it's 11. I just not as stronger as I thought. So there you go. So this is about 12, this is about 25 pounds.
Is BMW casting that in-house?
Yeah, I think so, yes. Yeah. It says BMW right there, so I guess yes. Hmm. So if we looked at this from the nose without ripping my pants, you can see where it was welded. You can see the white marks here. Okay, so this thing is welded to those aluminum longitudinals that are in the frame, and this is supporting the suspension. So what we're looking at here is impossible, and yet here it is. I mean, it's changed. It's a watershed. I've never seen anybody do this. If I proposed this to an aircraft company, I'd be immediately fired because they know that you can't do this, and yet here it is. It's all done. And you'll also notice that there's pockets here where it didn't get painted. They don't care. They don't care because it's aluminum. It's not going to corrode or anything.
So why paint any of it?
Just for looks. So when you look at it, it looks kind of black, and that's it. But where it doesn't need to be painted, they didn't bother.
Well, Sandy, so, you know, you said earlier that they weren't told they couldn't do this. Now, there are lots of engineers at lots of car companies who could conceivably do this.
Right.
Right? I mean, so what do you think it is about the culture of BMW that allowed them to create something like that, something which you say is generally thought to be impossible?
Okay, so BMW is not our customer. And I really don't know an awful lot about what happens at the FITS, the engineering building where all this stuff is done. I know what it used to be like when we did work with BMW a long time ago when they still owned, they owned still Mini, but when they owned Rover and those kind of badges. And when they owned that, then the BMW guys looked down on every engineer except for the German engineers. I know that when I went through there and I talked to their people about the BMW products versus the Rover products and whatnot, they were very, very proud. And they were also, they hadn't been diminished. An engineer in Germany is kind of like a big shot. An engineer over here, I mean, do you drive a train? Do you sweep the floor? Do you pick up garbage? I mean, you don't know what the engineer means over here. But over there, it's kind of a big deal. And I think it's just that they're allowed to do things and not looked down upon. Look at that overhead. They don't treat them quite like that. And I think that on this project, they were given a free hand. I know they spent $2.8 billion on R&D for this. And that's a total bill. So they developed adhesives, which I think are made under license by a bunch of different chemical companies. They developed that motor. They developed
partnership with the carbon fiber.
The carbon fiber all by itself.
Right.
I mean, they own their own build, and they've got another one coming. They're building, they're twinning that plant because they're going to need more.
In Moses Lake, they're twinning it.
Yes, yeah. And you probably saw the 7 Series, the new 7 Series. Did you see that one's all carbon fiber, too.
Mm-hmm. Hadn't seen that, no.
Right. Well, I'll send you the link. We have to stay ahead, you know. Anyways, no, I'm very impressed. These guys are all in, and they don't do things that are stupid. Mrs. Quant, I remember her very well. When I was working with them on the Rover projects, she wants to see a return on her investment. And for those of you who don't know, Mrs. Quant owns BMW for the most part. That's the Quant family.
And separately, she personally is an investor in what's it called? SQL? What's the?
SGL carbon fiber, right.
So
right.
Not only is BMW an owner in it, the Quant Mrs. Quant herself is an investor in that.
And again, you get back to ownership. I mean, who owns Ford? The Ford family? Not really. Is there a Mr. GM? Probably not.
No.
So what you're looking at there
is... The Ford family is still very influential there.
They are very, very influential, but I don't think they have the same influence that Mrs. Quant would have.
Right.
Okay? Or somebody like, what's his name there?
Piëch and the Porsche families at Volkswagen.
The Porsche family.
Or the union with Volkswagen.
Tesla, I've forgotten his name.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Okay, but, you know, so she wants to make money, but arguably the way lots of people think you make money is by making a product that is...
cheap.
Yes. Yeah. I thought I'd let you use the word.
Yes,
so these guys are creating something that is clearly not cheap, right?
But it has value. Okay, and that's what's always missing. When people come up and tell me, well, we've got to reduce costs, we've got to do this and whatnot, and I said, well, we can reduce costs, we can improve quality, and we can reduce weight. Oh, that's impossible. No, it's not. These guys just did it. I'm sure you guys can do it too. And I mean, if they can do it, you can't do it. Like on this thing here, we're selling these reports, right? Who's buying them? The government. Our federal government will probably be buying them. And why is that?
Hey, if they can do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Then.
But none of the car companies here in the Detroit area are interested in buying your report.
Not a one.
But the Chinese are, right?
Okay, so I had Chinese guests yesterday, this morning, Monday. And then when I was at the show, because I gave a speech then, there was a whole bunch of them there. And I got all next week from the SAE show. Mm-hmm. So.
that. So, yeah, that fits. And I think I knew you were going with that question anyway, Gary. Hey, we're going to take another quick break. We got even more to talk about with Sandy Monroe and I-3 Teradyne.
A little chemistry goes a long way, especially when it comes to vehicle development. From enabling the use of alternate materials to withstanding extreme vehicle environments, Henkel's adhesive, sealants, and surface technologies provide solutions for every vehicle segment. Come see for yourself. Our Detroit area headquarters offers 12 research and development and testing laboratories with the ability to do full-range testing and validation on actual vehicle parts. Sign up to tour our labs at henkelna.com/tour.
So you gave a big presentation about your teardown at the SAE World Congress taking place in Detroit this week. And I'll bet you had a lot of people interested, even if the car companies in town are not buying your report.
Well, actually, I was very – first off, I want to the guy that got this thing going, Mark
– LeDuc.
Mark LeDuc.
At SAE?
Mm-hmm. At SAE. I can't remember who got me going on that. Was that?
I think Mark and I were both talking to you at the same time.
Mark had the idea, or I think somebody had the idea over there. But anyway, Mark talked to us last year about this. And I think, personally, I think this is the wave of the future.
What is this being
the,
what?
The tech hub. So what they've done, what the SEA did was they, and I know we're off track, but They took this one area and they put this little
at the conference.
At the conference, right in the center of the conference. So you've got suppliers with their booths here and suppliers with their booths there and suppliers with their booths in front and the food in back of you. So they made this great big giant, 3-quarter circle. And there's a little podium and stage and some comfortable chairs and whatnot that if you're close to the front. And then stools, and then you can stand in the back if you don't, I don't want to be up on the front. I thought it was brilliant. That part was also good. So anyways, they created this, and then they created this little plexiglass thing around the outside edge so, the noise didn't bother the people inside. And my guess was that would seat maybe 100 people or so, something like that, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. I'm not. Anyway, so I couldn't believe the amount of people that showed up. The speech we gave was, it's only 20 minutes, so it's kind of fast, and I like that idea. And then on top of it, you had we had the place filled up, standing room only. Then they were standing around the outside of the plexiglass, and then they were standing at the side. And who were they? Well, mostly, I will tell you for sure, they were Chinese. The Chinese are here. They see everybody there, and they want to be here. Guess what? You're not going to get to there if you're trying to catch up to here, right? So they want to go
leapfrog.
They want to leapfrog, exactly.
So you said that none of the Detroit car makers are interested in your report.
No,
or at least openly interested in your report. What about suppliers?
Suppliers aplenty. Yeah, we're going to probably the report's broken up in a bunch of different areas.
What about Japanese automakers, European automakers?
Japanese.
We're picking on the Americans here, yeah. But what about the others?
Okay, so two of the biggest Japanese guys have contacted us, and one Korean. Well, I guess I wonder who that could be.
Yeah. Okay.
So
not Sung Young.
Yeah. So, anyways. we've had that. But if you can think of a Chinese car company, they probably sent us a note. They want to know about it. They've hit the website or something like that. And that's something else. I don't know. If they want to know a lot more about this, our website has a whole bunch of stuff. So that's leandesign.com. So if you go there, there's videos and there's articles and whatnot. That can help anybody that wants to know about it. They don't have to buy a report.
You said it fast, so I'm going to say it slower. Leandesign.com.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to help you out there, brother.
Oh, thank you. I don't care what he says. Yeah, you're okay.
So why, what's the purpose of the report? So, why would somebody want this report? Couldn't they make the argument as, well, I got all these smart engineers, they can do it. They don't need that.
They could, but remember, it cost me $2 million.
Yeah.
So it's a bargain. So we're kind of hoping that that the cheap will come out. Somebody will do the math and say, wait a minute, it cost him $2 million. Oh, and then the guys that that did the circuit boards and whatnot, they pumped $200,000 in. 2.2 million versus 500,000, because that's what it costs. Maybe we should get that. Mm-hmm. That's probably what's going to happen.
The report's 500,000.
Yeah,
if you the buy full the report, full report, everything. But you can buy different
you can
pieces.
You can buy 10. There's 10 little pieces or 5 big chunks. Yeah,
so, but functionally, what would someone get out of this?
Well, you'd get every process, every functional process to go all the way from raw material to the finished good.
Per part, in other words, it would be
per
A to Z.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So. At the end of the day, you'll know how to make that circuit board. You'll know how to make this, and then the electric motor that it goes into. Okay. At the end of the day, it's everything's been stripped bare.
Right.
It's the technical process. It's grandma's recipe for making cookies without anything missing, because grandma used to.
There's another ingredient, but I'm not telling you.
Everything right. Here is everything is done. Mm-hmm. And then in most cases, we also tell you if there's a supplier, who the supplier is. And our numbers are accurate. They're very accurate. We have very good press from our friends at the EPA and NHTSA. Most of the big consulting houses use us for costing and whatnot. In fact, I was telling John, we did a great big giant thing for one customer. We thought it was their competitor or whatever. It happened to be theirs. And when when we gave them our costing, we were within 2 cents. Mm. That's pretty accurate. And as John said, well, was the price of the thing 3 cents and you were within 2 cents? No, it's several hundred bucks for this thing.
So, and BMW found you guys were right on the money with this thing, too.
That was another surprise, too. In January at the auto show, a couple of guys came up, took a picture and went back, must have sent it to Germany and came back, and they wanted to know who gave us the prices and things like that. So it's very accurate.
They thought you got internal information.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
So. How do you rank BMW compared to the other global automakers in terms of their technical capability as represented by this?
Well, prior to this, I would have said they're in the pack. But now I'd say that they're so far advanced it isn't even funny. The only thing that I know of so here's the thing. They have the best battery. We used to say LG's batteries were the best. Now we're looking at this Samsung battery, and we can't believe our eyes.
Per cell, you mean?
Per cell, the whole strategy. So the cell stuff, that's these things here.
Just happen to have one in a bag.
Hey, we got bags of stuff here. But anyway, these are the different packs. So this is the cathode, and this is probably the outer. This is the outer windings, and it's wound. It's not cut up like the LG. So sure. Instead of chop, move, clamp, chop, move, clamp, this one just goes and you're done. What a great idea. How did they do that? I mean, so we cut it all the way down to nothing, and then the chemicals that go inside, all of the stuff that you need in order to make the Samsung battery, which we think is now the world's best, it's all in the report. With the cost.
Hey, and we just got a question from Mitch Weaver who says, how much does Sandy think the batteries are costing these days?
Yeah, if I did that, my guys would kill me. Costing is what we're selling. So kind of like...
Yeah, buy the report. Buy the report, Mitch.
Yeah,
it's only $500,000.
No. The battery report's less than that. If you want the battery report. But anyway,
we used to say that's the $50,000 question. It's the $500,000 question.
But only if you want the whole thing. Mitch, you can buy just the battery if you want to. But I'm going to try and steer clear of answering questions that will cause my associate, because we're sharing in the pain here. So,
yeah.
So anyway,
you got to make a return on your investment.
I do, and my guys, like I said, it's sharing the pain. So whatever I get, they're getting some of it as well. So
well, put it this way: do you see, Sandy, that BMW has really brought the cost of a battery of this energy capacity and so forth down from the last hybrids or electric vehicles you've torn apart?
You know what they did do was I'm trying to compare it to our prior to this battery, the Samsung battery in the i3. My favorite was the one in the Ford C-Max, and that was made by LG. And it's hard to compare because that was a hybrid and this is pure electric. But at the end of the day, I think what's really happening is it probably cost me about the same amount. But I got more power. I got a lot more power density.
What do you think they're using? I mean, I've driven this car, and one of the real disappointments is once you're on the combustion engine with that 650cc engine, this car is like riding a lawn tractor. I drove one up to Lansing, and it was just once it's on that engine, it's a rough, tough thing.
Yeah,
They save money with this scooter engine that's already in production.
650 is no scooter.
Well, it's a big scooter. I mean, they've got 650 scooters now, but
yeah, I personally think that was the stinker in the design.
Yeah,
I really hate that thing.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of ways that you can generate power, and that's maybe the worst.
Right.
When that thing turned on, I nearly peed my pants. That thing is so loud; it isn't even funny. But the idea is it's a city car. Driving it to Lansing, I think, is probably not something I would recommend.
Right.
If I was in New York, perfect. I'd scoot around. It'd be fine. Or L.A. or something
like
that.
But if it was your only car, you'd have to really sub-optimize that kind of
call
drive.
Uber.
Well,
right.
Well, this is a city car. This is not a Gran Turismo kind of thing. It's a city car.
Okay, we got some questions coming in here. In fact, we got a phoner right now. Ben, why don't we bring in the first phone call?
Hi, this is Noah from La Honda, California. I had a few questions for Mr. Monroe. One is, on the BMW i3, do you know what the purpose of those little pieces of honeycomb plastic on the trailing edge of the skirt area of the chassis are? I can't figure it out, and I was really hoping to know. Another is, do you know why Ford keeps switching back and forth between they're sort of plasma-coated aluminum cylinders versus steel liners. Also, what do you think are the limitations of Lotus's chassis? And finally, what are the smallest or most interesting companies you've worked with? Thanks.
So you got four questions in one there.
Four questions.
Okay, so let's start. The first one he had was about that honeycomb structure.
Yeah, the honeycomb structure I think you're referring to is part of the crush can for the rear interface, I think. I can only think of that as the only honeycomb I can think of.
There's another honeycomb structure right behind the front wheels.
Yes, there is, and there's a whole bunch of that stuff.
But that's
stuck
plastic,
in between.
Right.
The one in the front is plastic. The one in the center of the vehicle for T-boning I can't remember because I didn't do that part, but I think, and it's sandwiched inside the carbon fiber. I think that one is I think that's made out of aluminum. And I think the crush cans in the back have honeycomb, but
But it's all crash structure stuff.
It's all for crash, yeah.
Okay, second one that he had there, do you know anything about Ford switching back and forth between plasma-coated aluminum cylinder or steel liners?
Yeah, well, lots of people have tried plasma coating. I'm an engine engineer, and I really, I kind of like steel, so I'm partial.
And I can add something to that, too.
Yeah,
it's my knowledge that process is only used in the Shelby GT high-performance V8 and the new flat-plane crank GT350 engine. They're the only engines that Ford has. So they really haven't switched back and forth. They're just the only applications.
Those are all low-volume applications.
Low-volume applications, right.
And Mercedes is starting to use it a lot, that process.
Who is?
Oh, yeah?
Mercedes.
Mercedes, yes, has been using it. Actually, Porsche used it for a while. A lot of people have tried it out and then said, you know what, it's just something. Like I said, I like the idea of this carbon fiber, but it's not perfect for everything. There's no such thing as a silver bullet, so If I'm looking at a high-performance car and somebody's willing to pay a tremendous amount of money and I can throw away a block every once in a while because I couldn't hone it or whatever, whatever. But it's not something that anybody's going to go mainstream on.
Sure. Do you do anything with Lotus? What's the limits of Lotus's chassis?
Okay, it depends on which car. I don't know which one he's talking about. So, and Lotus doesn't just design their own cars. They design cars for other people. So I need more detail on that.
Okay, and small companies that you work with that you go, yowza, these guys are on to something.
All right, well, I can throw, I can toss one company out there right now that I think is brilliant. They're called Turtle Cell. What they do is... you take your iPhone, not a Samsung or BlackBerry, but you take your iPhone and you snap it into their case, and they've got little earbuds at the side, and you pull them out and you can put them in, and when you're all done, you push the button and they go back inside, and it sounds, and they've got a little extra battery capacity and stuff like that. It looks cool. You don't pay that much more for it than one of the other, I've forgotten the name of the other hard shell thing. Otter.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more expensive than that, or it's about the same price or something, but you got an extra feature. So that's a little company, that's a startup company, and that's a good example right there. And Michigan, too.
Cool.
Is this a good time for engineers who are interested in getting into businesses, do you think?
You mean as entrepreneurs?
Yeah.
Yeah, any time for an engineer is a good idea. And in fact, in bringing up engineers, Monroe needs more engineers. So if you're a costing engineer or you're a product design engineer, or better yet, what I really need is process engineers, especially if you happen to be in, the primaries like aluminum processing or processing cars.
You're hiring.
So why aren't there more of them? Why isn't there a greater availability? Why do you have to?
Why isn't there a greater ability? Well, that would
no,
be because,
availability.
Availability is because about 15 or 20 years ago, we told kids that it was stupid to be engineers. After all, who wants to be an engineer if you can be on Dancing with the Stars or be an actor?
That was my career path. It didn't work out.
I know. I heard about you Dancing with the Stars. but it was after a drinking fest and you fell down. Look at them stars. Sorry. Yes. But anyway, it's a tragedy. And again, this isn't just unique to the United States. This has happened our neighbors our northern neighbors. In Canada, they have a shortage.
In Germany, Mexico, I hear, has a shortage.
I was going to get right there. That I'm telling you, Mexico, on the other hand, is boosting anybody who promotes bringing engineers into the marketplace succeeds. Germany is having problems, and now they're actually scabbing or stealing engineers from other places.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And by the way, for carbon fiber, who's the number one country for carbon fiber?
Japan.
Austria.
Really?
Yes. If you want carbon fiber manufacturing and whatnot, that's the place. And if you want to design in carbon fiber, what's the country?
England.
You got it.
Yeah.
And that's because of all the motor racing stuff.
You got it.
That F1 circle, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, even beyond F1, but primarily driven by that, right?
So, why aren't we in it? Because who cares, right? We don't care. And then there's the other rules and regulations for the aircraft industry. We could have done this stuff, I think, if somebody would have let us, if the FAA would have, been a little not so tight, we could have probably done stuff like this on the 787. There was tons of applications where we could have gone to a plastic solution. But if you have to use aircraft carbon fiber, which is
super expensive,
unbelievably expensive.
Yeah.
You're screwed, and they don't like RTM. They're all hand layup and worthless.
Hey, we're getting down towards the end of the show here. We do have one more phone call, and I hate leaving those people out there. So, Ben, let's bring in, we'll make this one the last one.
Hello, this is Clem Zorowski in Delmont, Pennsylvania. My question is for the gentleman there, who funds this tear down, who pays for that? And since a lot of stuff is patented. Knowing how they do it, you can't do it any. You can't use it in your product anyway. So, who funds these teardowns? Thank you.
Well, in this case, that would be me. I funded it. It came from our. We basically used up all our profits and through the wonderful grace of our bank. Independent Bank. I might as well throw. If I'm throwing names out of it, Independent Bank was very good to us, or has been very good to us, and kept feeding us. We've managed to clean it all up, but the $2 million that was Monroe and Associates that absorbed that cost, and Tech Insights have also done this on spec. We did this because we wanted to make sure that we thought anyway. That North America could use this as a boost. Now, the second question was, what about the patents and all that other stuff? Yeah, there are patents, but for every patent, there's a way of getting around a patent. We get paid for that every day to find out how to do something and make it go away. Patents are also traded. Maybe the guy tuned in a little late. I've forgotten his name. But anyways, he may have tuned in a little late, but at the beginning of the program, I said that Toyota has traded their fuel cell to BMW, so BMW gave them the underpinnings for the Z4. So that way, you know, that's what automotive people do all the time. That's not a secret.
A lot of those trade.
Everybody, in fact, even the cell phone guys, they trade patents and copyrights and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, we're at the top of the hour here. This has been fantastic, Sandy. This is really good.
Thank you.
I don't know, this may be the fourth or fifth time you've been on the show. You've been on quite a bit. You go back to the old shop.
Exactly.
And so it's great having you back on again. Very valuable. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much.
Good. Lindsay, thanks for joining us. We'll
thanks,
have you
John.
Back again, too.
We didn't even get to the front suspension. That's got to be part two.
Yeah. Actually, I brought all this crap. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I got to lug it all back. Yeah. I'm
going to build a car when we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Gary, you and I will be back here next week.
Next week.
We'll do another show because AutoLine After Hours is a great way for anybody to be able to get really good inside insights into what's going on in this business. So I want to thank all you guys.
Thanks, John.
I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Yeah. AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Henkel, excellence is our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.